Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, November 11th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the weekend's box office numbers. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, I thought actually we could start today's show on a bit of a sad note. Tony Todd, who people might know from his role in the original Candyman movie, as well as literally hundreds of other things. Unfortunately, he passed away on Friday night, and I know that his work meant a lot to you as somebody who has been sort of operating in the horror space for a long time and in that fandom. So what are your memories of Tony Todd, and what are some of your favorite performances of his?
I mean, look, Tony Todd is one of those guys that, you know, I mean, for me, it's the one everyone brings up, but the original Candyman is one of those movies that, you know, horror often gets treated as like lesser than, which drives me nuts. And even to this day, we still have to talk about that. We're only like the rarest of rare things, like Get Out sort of rise to that level, like above where like the general, you know, population can be like, oh no, this horror is good. I think Candyman, even though it doesn't necessarily have that reputation, it should. That original Candyman is such a spectacular piece of cinema. And so much of that has to do with Tony Todd's performance, central performance as the title character in that movie. And, yeah, I mean, like, to me, just that voice and the presence and what he brings to what is already, you know, a fascinating concept. Like, I can't take credit for this, but it was Chris Evangelista, our own Chris Evangelista, posted on social media over this week. And he's like, you know, there's something about that movie. Like, he's so engaging in that part. And when he says, like, be my victim, that actually sounds enticing in some way. Like, mm-hmm. That's all Tony Todd. You know, I should say that I had the good pleasure of interviewing him three or four years ago, just after COVID. And he's one of those guys that, you know, I can't even imagine how many thousands of interviews he's done for all these small movies that he's done and all these whatever. And I was like a little nervous about it. And I don't tend to get that nervous just because I had no idea if he's going to be standoffish, didn't want to be there. Engaging, gentlemanly, thoughtful, like every bit the person that you could only possibly hope he would have been, you know, just like in that 15-minute exchange, he gave me more than like, just as a fan, like, just like, oh, thank God, he was awesome, you know? And just so I'm super thankful to have had that. And I just, the little bit of interaction I have with him, I could attest to him being a really good dude in addition to being like a tremendous actor. And I just, you know, it's such a shame because he wasn't young, but he wasn't old yet. You know, he had some stuff left to give, and you know, just pour one out for an actor who's probably better at being an actor than he ever actually got credit for being.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, man. I mean, just like, again, I've never really been like a huge horror person, but I remember watching the first Candyman. I think I was 15 or 16, and that movie, as you kind of alluded to, like there's some pretty serious stuff in that movie. It's not just like a throwaway, nonsensical kind of horror movie. That was the first movie I think that, like, for me at that age, kind of introduced me to like some racial elements and things like that I just had not considered before. Like, that movie opened my eyes in some ways, which is not something you could say about, you know, every horror movie that comes out the pike. And yeah, his performance just like sticks with me all these years later. He was also in Final Destination, and like he showed up in The Rock, and he it's like 250 movies or something since the early 80s. So just like an incredibly prolific
actor.
Yeah.
He was a working man's actor, and I like that about him. And I will say, to your point, The Rock is definitely one of Michael Bay's best movies. And I think that like the maybe underrated, but Tony Todd in The Rock, he's having to act against Ed Harris and these like Titans, and he completely holds his own. You know, in like a movie where, you know, you could argue he was outclassed in some way, like on paper, but he just completely, you know, owns several of those scenes, particularly the scene where, you know, he's trying to overthrow the general to get the money. And just, yeah, I don't know, man, what a under, and especially like a voice actor too, like some of the, I believe he voiced Darkseid and a few DC animated projects, and like that voice, like that's what I'm always going to remember is that voice. And I think that was the craziest thing, talking to him, like when I interviewed him, is that like even though he wasn't putting on a show, like that's his voice. And when you're talking to him and he's just answering a question and you're like, oh, damn, like that. It's just, he's just got that commanding, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's just a, I'm glad I was, I will say the one thing I was glad to see on Twitter and all these social sites that are kind of hellscapes lately, like when he died, the amount, like the dude got his flowers, you know, people really like poured it out for him. And it's nice to see that, that his work did mean something.
Yeah. Speaking of voice performances, the last one that I remember him being in or that really like sort of made an impact on me was he voiced Venom in Spider-Man 2, the video game that just came out a couple years ago or last year, I guess, which is just a great game. And I didn't even realize that he voiced that character until I was looking at his IMDb the other night after he passed and was like, oh my God, that was him. Like, that's incredible. Of course it was him. So yeah, just rest in peace to Tony Todd. Just a terrific, terrific actor. All right, Ryan. So let's get into talking about some stuff that happened at the box office this past weekend. I guess we can start by running through the top 10 if you want to do that for me.
I would love to. As I think we sort of alluded to last week, this is a quiet weekend. And next weekend or this upcoming week will be a little quiet as well before the storm hits when both Wicked and Gladiator 2 arrive. But nonetheless, some interesting stuff happened this week, and we'll get into it. But number one for the third weekend in a row was Venom the Last Dance with $16.2 million. It crossed the $100 million mark domestically, and it is just a few million shy of $400 million worldwide. It will probably get to $500 million worldwide before the end of it, meaning it could at least get close to, if not surpass, the gross of Venom Let There Be Carnage, even though it didn't really seem like that was going to be possible at the beginning of this movie's run. Kind of fascinating stuff. Number two, we have The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, which is the latest from Lionsgate. Did $11.1 million, a much-needed win for Lionsgate. We can talk about that a little bit more in a second. Number three was another newcomer in the form of Heretic, the latest horror film from A24, with $11 million. These are estimated grosses, by the way, so it's possible those two movies could flip because they were really close to one another. But in any event, a good result for Heretic, as it was the third biggest opening weekend for an A24 movie behind only Hereditary and Civil War. Number four, we have The Wild Robot still hanging in there like you wouldn't believe. In its seventh weekend, $6.6 million, dropping just 11%. It has now made a little over $130 million domestically, $161 internationally. It should pass $300 million worldwide within the next week or so. Remarkable given that that movie's been on VOD for a while. Number five, we have Smile 2 still holding strong as well. $5 million in its fourth weekend, dropped just 26%. It is now at $123 million worldwide. It should get to around 150, which I would wager probably means we're getting Smile 3 almost for sure. One that we should talk about a little bit more in a bit is Conclave, the Pope drama thriller that has been doing shockingly well. In its third weekend, it made $4.1 million, dropping less than 19%, and it added 487 screens because the demand has been so high. So it has now made $21.5 million domestically. It is Focus's biggest hit in a hot minute. At number seven, we had Anora, the Oscar contender from Neon, which made $2.4 million in its kind of first week going wide. It's on 1,100 screens. So it had a pretty decent per screen average. It's not like a barn burner, but it's hanging in there. It's doing okay. It's now made $7.2 million domestically in total. Number eight, we had Here with $2.4 million, dropping 50% after its opening weekend. $9.5 million total, kind of lousy per screen average this weekend. That one's just not really going to work, unfortunately. Number nine, we have We Live in Time, the romantic flick from A24. Another $2.2 million, dropped just 36%. $21.8 million domestic running total, starting to roll out overseas. That's going to be a solid little hit for A24. And at number 10, I cannot believe we're still talking about this, but Terrifier 3 in its fifth weekend, another $1.4 million, $53.3 million domestically, and $77.8 million worldwide. Looks like Terrifier 3 is probably going to get to close to 90 worldwide. And if there's some sort of Christmas re-release or something like that, it could, and I stress could, touch 100 million worldwide, which is just, I truly don't, we talk about surprising things and I feel like this one definitely like came and went. I cannot emphasize how unbelievably surprising that is.
Yeah.
That's even in the conversation.
It's still a long way away from that, but my God, if that happens for an unrated movie with that budget and like that marketing campaign and that level of extremity to hit 100 million would be, well, I think it's got to be one of the biggest box office stories in years if that ends up happening, right?
Well, okay, let's even talk about it as it exists, just for some, because like, all right, as of right now, it's going to get to 80 million. Like that would be the absolute floor at this point, right? So let's talk about movies that came out this year globally that made less money than Terrifier 3, just to sort of paint a picture. Speak No Evil, which was from Blumhouse, big stars, whatever, $76.6 million. The First Omen, Back to Black, Tarot, The Strangers Chapter 1, The Substance, Blink Twice, Imaginary, Abigail, Fly Me to the Moon, Horizon and American Saga. And by the way, these movies that I'm talking about, Terrifier made a lot more than these movies. If it can somehow get closer to 100 million, it's going to soon pass M. Night Shyamalan's Trap. It might pass Challengers. It might pass Argylle. You know, like, so like we're talking about movies that had movie stars, big budgets, big marketing campaigns, big, all these things. And it's just, you know, so it doesn't even have to get to that $100 million mark for us to, because we're going to stop talking about this movie probably next week because it's going to fall out of the top 10. So unless it, you know, does cross that $100 million boundary, we're probably not going to talk about it anymore. But I would like to take this moment to say that even if it doesn't hit that $100 million mark, this is utterly bananas. And everyone at Cineverse and Bloody Disgusting and Damien Leone, good on you. That's crazy.
Awesome. Okay, so let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, so running through a couple more of those things that you mentioned and sort of digging into them a little bit deeper. You mentioned Lionsgate had a big win with the Christmas movie, right? So I was kind of surprised that that movie performed as well as it did, given it didn't really seem to have a huge ad campaign behind it. Like, I don't know if I've seen any of the trailers for that film in front of any movie that I've seen at my local AMC recently, for example, but that's just anecdotal. But I don't know, like sometimes I kind of get the sense that like studios are spending a lot on an ad campaign for something. And this was definitely not one of those cases, but it seemed to perform pretty well, right?
Yeah, it did. And so it's one of those things where it's a movie that its budget was under 10 million all in. It was kind of a faith-based movie, but one of those ones that like it's faith-based, but not like explicitly so that, you know, your average moviegoer can enjoy it. And the other thing with these Christmas movies is that they tend to hang around, you know, because you've got the holiday season in front of you. So, you know, this $11 million opening, you know, you're probably looking at a 3 to 4 times multiplier. So it could easily do 35, 40 million domestic, you know, against a sub $10 million budget. I mean, that's where Lionsgate sort of thrives. And plus the other thing about a Christmas movie is that if you can engage an audience well enough, you get money every single year. You don't just get money this year. But yeah, it was a very minimal marketing campaign. It was one of these acquisitions Lionsgate made that they knew that they could do something with. And it's worth talking about that Lionsgate, we talked about, you know, Borderlands, The Crow, Killer's Game, they had this run of like 4 or 5 flops in a row. And Lionsgate reported their quarterly earnings last week and they lost $163 million in the quarter. And, you know, the movie studio, you know, barely made any money. The profit from the motion picture arm was just $2.6 million that quarter. I mean, it was almost nothing. And no small part thanks to those huge theatrical flops. The only money they're making is from their library. So, yeah, Lionsgate really needed a win, you know, because, yeah, they lost a lot of money last quarter, but also just for the optics of the movie studio, especially because Michael, which is a movie we've talked a lot about, that got delayed to much later next year because I think the studio believes they have a much better shot at Oscars, and they also believe it's going to be like a $1 billion hit. But that also means they have almost a full year before their next absolute guaranteed home run hit. So they needed this, and they needed it bad.
Yeah, that's the Michael Jackson biopic, just for people who may not have immediately recognized that title. But okay, so I'm trying to think of the other. Oh, you mentioned Conclave is another one that we should talk about, because I think you said that's Focus's biggest hit in a little while. Do you know what their biggest recent hit aside from that was? Do you have that off the top of your head?
Yeah, I can pull it up real quick. I know I'd looked this up earlier, but yeah, so like Focus has been one of those studios that has pivoted largely to like a VOD model, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, they sort of put their movies in theaters, they do what they do, and they hope that they do well on VOD. So like, just for example, like The Bike Riders came out earlier this year. That did $35.5 million worldwide. Fine for that sort of movie. You know, Lisa Frankenstein didn't cross $10 million domestically. You've got stuff like that, or Drive Away Dolls, which made just $5 million, you know, domestically. You know, Back to Black made just a little over six. Like, they haven't had anything really break out this year. And even if you go back a couple of years, you know, you have movies like, you know, Tar, that was nominated for a bunch of, you know, Oscars in 2022, but that made $6 million domestically. The Northman did $34 million domestic. Downton Abbey was really the last one that they had that was a true breakout, which did $92 million worldwide, the Downton Abbey sequel. So I don't know if Conclave's going to get to that level, but for a movie which I believe had a $20 million budget, you know, it's doing really well and it's hanging around. And yeah, I mean, it's just nice to see like an adult movie like that. But you know, it's also interesting because that's going on this week. And then you also had Heretic open, and they're both like very religious movies. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that they're not like, you know, faith-based necessarily, but they're like religious focused and they're both doing very well. And I find that kind of fascinating. Did you see Heretic yet, Ben?
I did. I liked it. Yeah. I think it kind of, I mean, to say it lost me in the back half is too strong, but like Jacob, I really love the front half. And then it kind of gets a little ridiculous, I think, in the back, but I still really came away enjoying it.
Yeah, I think I liked it more. I loved it, but I think that like the more that it was one of those things where I left the theater. It's true, it doesn't end as strong as it starts, but I also think that given how strong that start is, it's hard to hold that against it. The biggest sin this movie has to commit is that it has to become a horror movie at some point. but I also think it's wildly entertaining, and I think it's cool that audiences are embracing it. I think that because it's really the only horror movie coming out in November, like big horror movie, like even though we have huge competition on the way from, you know, the likes of Wicked and Gladiator 2, it actually has the ability to hang around. And so I think, you know, it's good that A24 is kind of getting another, you know, horror is not going to run the risk of becoming franchise focused entirely because you have movies like Heretic and Longlegs still pulling in audiences. And I think that is important to sort of highlight. So, you know, we'll have to see how it does in the coming weeks, but in the early going, it's doing well. And I think a lot of it is on the strength of Hugh Grant's very, very good performance in that movie, I should say.
Yes. Yeah. Loved it. Okay, so anything else to say about Venom, Let There Be Carnage, Venom the Last Dance, before we completely sort of move on from that one?
Yeah, I think, because again, I think after that opening weekend, I thought, you know, maybe it would touch 400 million worldwide. It's held really well. You know, let's not forget that this had by far the lowest opening of the three movies domestically, but it has now, you know, largely thanks to just doing gangbusters business overseas, that is going to cross 400 million in the next couple of days. And just because of how well things are going, it might touch 500 million worldwide, which would make it like, I mean, it's already an unqualified hit because it had $120 million budget, which is far less than these things tend to do. So, you know, if it gets that $500 million mark, I hate to beat this up, but it does put Sony in an awkward position with these, like, what do you do with the Spider-Man stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, because like, you know, this made money. Yes, it was because of Tom Hardy and because people already invested in this trilogy. But, you know, I don't envy them, you know, as far as like the decision. But it is in a year where superhero movies have really had a tough go. I mean, there's something to be said about a movie like this doing that kind of money. You know, yeah. it is kind of interesting that, you know, for as much as we talk about superhero movies feeling like they're dead, well, you know, there are only 9 other movies that came out this year that made more money than Venom the Last Dance. So, you know,
wow. When you say it like that, that really kind of underscores the unlikely success of a movie that really doesn't have a ton of vocal fans out there. It seems like everyone that I've talked to and everyone that I've read anything, you know, who's written about this movie has been like, yeah, it's okay. Like, at best, that's been the reaction.
Yeah, morbid curiosity gets this movie to $400 million.
Yeah,
but also, again, keep in mind, that's our, you know, our very, like, North American, you know, where this movie has made $115 million, which is a very respectable amount of money. But, you know, it's overseas appeal, mm-hmm. you know, and that's why I also don't like focusing so much on purely domestic box office, which is something that we do focus on a lot. But it is important that this is a global theatrical marketplace, and in a healthy global theatrical marketplace, movies like this can thrive, you know? And so, you know, I mean, look, in a quiet period, are these movies for me? Not really. Is it helping keep theaters afloat before this Thanksgiving boom happens? You bet. Am I thankful that exists? Sure. You know, so it's just one of those things. I don't know. We probably won't talk about it a lot more in the weeks that ahead, but you know, it's not often that a movie tops the box office 3 weeks in a row. So, I mean, something is going right here. That's all I can say.
There you go. All right. So the last thing I wanted to talk to you about is Cillian Murphy has made his first movie since Oppenheimer, and it has not performed very well. Tell me a little bit about this.
Yeah, you'd be forgiven for knowing this is the thing, but let's talk about context for a second. Oppenheimer made nearly $1 billion worldwide, won Best Picture, Cillian Murphy won Best Actor at the Oscars, big deal. So you'd think like Cillian Murphy's follow-up to Oppenheimer would be like a highly advertised big deal. It was not. It's a little Irish drama called Small Things Like These. A company called Roadside Attractions put this out. $585,000 on 799 screens for a very lousy $732 per screen average. You would think that, I mean, I know it's a small movie, it's an Irish drama, but it's got like a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, we're also not talking about like some critical dumpster fire. This is a really acclaimed movie. And so somehow Roadside couldn't capitalize on that. They couldn't, you know, either get the marketing dollars or the whatever needed to sort of get this on people's radar, you know, to even get it to like $1 million on opening weekend. That's kind of shocking to me, but sort of worth acknowledging that, you know, it's not my job to market these movies, but hey, did you guys know that Cillian Murphy is in a really acclaimed drama right now? Well, it's out there. So, but yeah, it's fascinating to me that they weren't able to kind of like use any of that juice to get this movie on people's radar.
Yeah, weirdly enough, this actually is a trailer that I saw in my local AMC, which I was kind of surprised by because it seems to be a very, very small movie. And also I saw something on Deadline or Hollywood Reporter or something that I think it's called Artist Equity, the company that was recently put together by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon were the ones who worked on this or a company that worked on this. So you would think with those guys involved and then also the Cillian Murphy of it all, that this kind of, I don't know, could have broken through maybe, cracked through some of the noise in a bigger way than it actually did. But yeah, just an interesting thing to note and maybe we can do their jobs for them and at least like put this movie on people's radar if they've never heard of it. It's called Small Things Like These. So I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but it's like you said, it's got great reviews. So we'll see. Hopefully it'll be good and hopefully people will have a chance to check it out. I don't think it's playing in theaters near me yet.
But, yeah, I don't think it was near me either because I was curious about this one. But, you know, I mean, I hope it goes to a bigger streamer or something. Just because it does feel like the kind of, I get the sense that, you know, because Cillian is an Irish actor and I think he probably took this on because of like a very Irish story. So it's probably personal to him. I don't want to make assumptions, but it sort of seems that way. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it doesn't just get like bare, you know, I don't know. It just seems like a shame to have something like this just completely fall apart. But, you know, yeah. I just thought it was interesting that it just seems like the kind of thing that maybe not become a hit, but certainly more than this. I don't know.
Okay, any closing thoughts here? Any things that you want to touch on before we wrap it up?
Just that Red One will be the big release this upcoming weekend. It's already done a little bit of business overseas. Be prepared for me and Ben to once again have the conversation of, does an expensive streaming movie still qualify as a hit in theaters? But that is truly the last calm before the storm. And then we're going to have a lot to talk about every week for the rest of the year. So get ready, everybody.
Excellent. All right, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the stories that we mentioned at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few of them in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you all tomorrow.